This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Joy Powers. Driving down poverty and increasing wellness, those are among the critical challenges being tackled at Milwaukee's annual Summit on Poverty. The two-day program is a collaboration between Marquette University and the Social Development Commission. It's designed to foster creative conversations among community leaders, educators, and members of the community. Dr. Monica White is one of the summit's keynote speakers. White is a professor at UW-Madison, and she teaches courses in environmental justice, urban agriculture, and community systems. She spoke with Lake Effect's Susan Bentz and explains how her research has been influenced in part by growing up in Detroit, Michigan.
So having been raised in Detroit and graduated from high school, and then returning to care for my parents, I needed a research idea that would, applying for a position in Detroit. I wanted to find a research idea that was understudied. And what I recognized was that while the city of Detroit was being recognized as, a community that was reconnecting to, just reestablishing urban agricultural roots and, creating these community gardens and these growing spaces, as a part of the city's response to the automobile decline, what was key to me was, as I looked at the stories and who were the people that were being presented, it was often folks who were not from Detroit and often were not African-American, given the percentage of African-American community. In the, if the African-American community is over 80-some-odd% at that particular time, then how can all the stories about folks that are growing food in the city, very few people were willing to talk about African-Americans who were doing this. And so I felt like there was a voice that was being overlooked, and I wanted to use my research skills to make sure to add the voices of those who were overlooked, the African-Americans who had been, many of whom had left the South during the Great Migration, Great Migration, moved to the North, and continued to grow in backyards, and then in the 70s began to grow in community gardens and other city initiatives that encouraged folks to grow food as a strategy of toward making sure that families had nutrient-rich foods.
Part of your aim is to support food justice, providing the scholarship that helps to develop strategies and expand its reach. Would that be accurate?
Well, I mean, I think it's, to expand the reach based on our historical connections, or rethinking our historical connections, offering a counter narrative to our historic connections to food production and the environment. So for me, it seems that a lot of the scholarship, when you think about Black farmers, a lot of the language around that has often been sharecropping, tenant farming, and slavery. And while these are a part of our historical legacies, there have also been other folks who have used agriculture as a strategy of resistance and resilience, as people in Detroit, Milwaukee, Chicago, New Orleans are doing. And I felt like the scholarship did not support the kind of work that they were doing in this moment. And I just knew in my heart that there had to be a way to explain why turning to agriculture was important, and who have been the other models, examples, and historical figures who were involved in, demanding access to land, fighting the dispossession against, entities that were trying to dispossess African-Americans from their land. And so I wanted to provide a counter-narrative, one that could support food justice activists today and those who are working towards self-provisioning as a strategy of community resilience.
This summit, which you'll be a part of, aims to be a catalyst of change, to create a safe place for well-informed, honest discussion. Mm-hmm. We as communities, many facets of our society, have so much work to do.
Yeah.
Are there straightforward strategies that we're missing as a society?
So I think in responding to this, as somebody who asks questions for a living, I think that Chimamanda Adichie's conversation around the danger of a single story is really important here. If we're often thinking of, so just as a backstory, Susan, I'm talking to my students in class yesterday, I'm, sort of helping them to frame the argument around why it's important to listen to folks that are food insecure to understand what they believe as the solutions to food inaccessibility. I think often what happens is we have two ways of thinking or understanding and articulating the fact that communities and families go hungry. One is the question of do they have the education to, you know, to prepare nutrient-rich foods? And two, are the establishments in close proximity for folks to access nutrient-rich foods? And I think that both of these tend to look at the person who's food insecure as the cause of food insecurity, opposed to a structure. We grow and produce enough food to feed the world many times over. The problem isn't food production. It's often food distribution based on the idea that some people deserve some quality of food while others deserve a different quality of food. And a lot of that is based on categories that we as sociologists study, race, class, gender, nationality, and what have you. If you believe that food should be a human right, the way we feed communities would be very different than the structure that we have right now. Right now, we have a system that benefits off of exploitation and unequal access of food resources to some communities opposed to others. And that, I think, is a problem. Now, the solution to me, there are many solutions, some of which are structural, but what I am most encouraged by, the voices of those who are responding to and identifying strategies to meet their own family and community's needs. And many of those organizations are the ones that I talk about in Freedom Farmers, Agricultural Resistance, and the Black Freedom Movement.
Is it acknowledging the mechanisms, the organizations, the leaders who already exist in neighborhoods and communities, and then listening to them, learning from them, and adding, you know, just participating a bit?
To me, I truly believe that most communities have the solutions to whatever the conditions are that inhibit their or impede the possibilities for progress. I think every community knows what the problems are and already has a sense of what those solutions are. It's often that they're disconnected from the mechanisms of power to make those solutions become a reality. I see these organizations that are creating food hubs and alternative food networks and food preservation and community preparation mechanisms as a way that a community engages, actually participates in their own solutions. And so watching community organizations create community growing spaces, value-added products, means that they're showing us, by example, in small ways, how is it that we can feed a hungry community nutrient-rich food at a different price point than what the market would tell us. And so we look at having a whole, healthy, happy community opposed to what is the profit margin? How do we decide based on economics? It is this reality that if food is a human right, then what is the mechanism? And while there are many mechanisms, community members are standing up and speaking on their own behalf.
What is environmental justice to you? How do you see it, and how does it need to be? How do we get there?
Yeah. So for me, environmental justice recognizes that all of us ask for things from the earth. And while we all ask for things of the earth, there are some of us who enjoy its benefits and others who suffer from the consequences. So for me, environmental justice is an effort, an attempt to raise the awareness that everyone isn't equally experiencing the benefits and the disadvantages of our use of the Earth's resources. And it is an acknowledgement that organizations, communities, and residents are speaking out against various kinds of inequities with regard to the benefits and the disadvantages. And so a justice movement would be recognizing that the folks in Barbados did not cause climate change, but their island is now decimated and they're forced to adjust to a different, we have to recognize climate migrants as a reality. Folks are going to be forced from their homes as a result of climate change and the effects of weather disasters that are impacting certain communities. And while it's important to recognize that the people of Barbados didn't cause this to happen, but they are the victims, that's an example of environmental racism. And the justice movement asks us to you know, to recognize that everyone isn't equally impacted by our use and misuse of the environmental resources. Was that helpful?
Yeah, definitely. So when you lead a discussion on environmental justice, is your approach to start with the assets?
Absolutely.
And so is poverty automatically part of that conversation, or do you think that...
Put a pause on the poverty question for just a second. Let me say this. I think what I know is that often as researchers, we're taught to identify a problem. And if we're taught to identify a problem, then that's the beginning of sort of looking at things, to me, from a deficit approach. In other words, if I come to your house and I say, well, that's wrong, how does that make you feel? I stand against that in terms of my own research approach because I believe that every community, every entity has something upon which to build. So I approach my research question from an asset approach, which means every community has something upon which to build. And it just sometimes takes us to look for what are the strengths of a particular community to understand the ways that we might respond to food access and insecurity in a way that leaves that community feeling better. So going in saying what's wrong is very different than saying, here are the assets upon which we can build. What is the vision for our community and how do we want to move in that direction? So the latter is more of what I do in terms of an asset-based approach that allows a community to think about the strengths, to think about what are our, you know, what is our vision for the future and what are the mechanisms that allow us to get there. And I think it leaves people feeling more empowered having had that discussion than one that is focused on what's wrong. Having said that, Susan, I think that this question about poverty is disconnected, right? So on the one hand, EJ is not caused by people who are impoverished.
That being environmental justice.
It's experienced by those who are impoverished. And so recognizing the ways that poverty actually contributes to the consumption of environmental toxins, such as the example of Flint. Residents of Flint had been telling us there was something wrong with the water. We ignored them. And had they not been, had the city not been experiencing the kinds of economic impact, then we probably would have listened a lot sooner. So to me, the question of poverty puts an analysis of environmental justice in a different frame. Poverty is the outcome of an unfair system, and poverty creates the mechanism for exploitation, contamination, and exposure to environmental toxins. It's not a solution. It's part of the problem. I mean, I think, you know, a lot of folks that are active in the food justice movement are not food insecure. A lot of folks that are involved in these justice movements are not those who experience the condition that they're speaking on behalf of, which is part of the problem. So how do we make sure that we elevate the voices, the solutions, the ideas of those who experience whatever social phenomena we call ourselves, you know, in support of? And so I think that that's a very different orientation to understanding movements, but also it's a different orientation as an academic to study what we identify as a particular social condition is by actually listening to the voices of those who live this on a day-to-day. I think your research questions are very different, and the ideas that you come up with will be very different than if you're only exposed to academic environments.
With the research, the teaching, the speaking that you do around the world, where do you see the pockets of most promise and things that we as a society might really gravitate to?
Right. Yeah, I'm excited and encouraged by young people who are concerned about their future and their search for solutions, solutions that feel fair, just, and whole. And I'm encouraged by the ways that I see young people engaging with community organizations and using whatever voice, whatever privilege they have, whatever energy to organize around, you know, truly, genuinely a better tomorrow. I'm encouraged by young people.
Dr. Monica White is an associate professor of environmental justice at UW-Madison, and she's one of the keynote speakers at the 2019 Summit on Poverty. Her talk will be tomorrow morning at Marquette University. You can find more information about the summit and Dr. Monica White at wuwm.com.